It's time for everyone's favorite podcast on the web. Pivot off the wall. Where you get the best sports talk and info in New York.
You lollygag the ball around the infield. You lollygag your way down to first. You lollygag in and out of the dugout. You know what that makes you, Larry?
Lollygag.
Lollygaggers. What's our record, Larry?
8-16.
8-16. How'd we ever win 8?
It's a miracle.
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
It's an all-new Off the Wall on YesNetwork.com. And here's your host, Chris Sheeran.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Off the Wall podcast here on YesNetwork.com. Chris Sheeran, Joe Auriemma, and a special guest, Jim Duquette, former Mets general manager, former Orioles vice president of baseball operations, currently co-host of the Power Alley with Kevin Kennedy on SiriusXM's MLB Network Radio, XM 175, Sirius 210. Did I get all that right, Jim?
You got it. That's a mouthful, but you got it all.
All right. The obvious place to start is Cliff Lee and his destination. Now, Yankee fans, I guess they really think they need Cliff Lee. And at first I said, you know, the Yankees have some pitching talent down on the farm. But then after taking a look at the crop of free agents underneath Lee, I would tend to agree with the fans and say, yeah, the Yankees kind of need to sign Cliff Lee.
Yeah, they do. I mean, and we know really the next best guy, well, two next best guys. One is De La Rosa, the lefty out of Colorado. He has a lot of question marks just in terms of the command of his pitches. He's got great stuff, and I think he might be good. I think a lot of people think he might be good, but he's too much of a question mark. And we all know the other guy, the righty that the Yankees already had, that's not going to work with Carl Pavano. So, yeah, Cliff Lee is the guy, man. He's the guy. And you know what? I don't think there's any reason to believe that he can't end up there in New York. Most people in baseball feel like, you know, the Yankees are going to be the highest bidder. But it's going to take some time, you know, and I think that, you know, Brian Cashman has negotiated these type of deals before, obviously, with CC Sabathia, and they certainly seem to have the wherewithal. We know they have the money. So, again, if you're handicapping it, I think the Yankees clearly are the front runner.
Well, it is the holiday season, and if Yankee fans had their way, when they woke up and went down to the Hanukkah candle, the menorah, or the Christmas tree, or whatever holiday you celebrate, they would find under that tree this starting rotation: Felix Hernandez, Cliff Lee, Tim Lincecum, CC Sabathia, and Ubaldo Jimenez. Right. But that's not going to happen. So currently the Yankees have Sabathia, Burnett, Hughes, Pettit if he comes back. He's thinking about retiring. And, of course, Ivan Nova, who came up last year late and had a couple of very good starts for the Bombers. Now, let me ask you this question. You mentioned De La Rosa. Here's a couple of guys that you know, they used to be names, and now they're coming off of injuries, surgery. Would you take a chance, would you take a shot on a guy like an Eric Bedard?
Boy, you know, and I've had Bedard when I was with the Orioles.
Right.
He has tremendous, tremendous arm. That was, I think, three surgeries ago. And that's the problem with this guy. You know, I mean, this guy's hurt all the time. He was hurt when I had him, too. And there's no better guy to when he's healthy, as a left-hander, he'd be terrific, you know, in somebody's rotation. You can't vouch for his health. And as long as you are willing to, you know, sit there and deal with the other issues that come with being Eric Bedard, which is, you know, I don't think he's a guy that the media cares for all that much. He doesn't care for the media. So that's going to be an issue in New York. So I think the health, media issue, I would say if I was in New York, I'd pass on him.
All right, so there's De La Rosa and Bedard. Let me just give you a quick fire the rest of the list. Bonderman, right. Dave Bush, Bruce Chen, Kevin Coria, Doug Davis, Justin Dukeshire, Jeff Francis, Freddie Garcia, John Garland, Aaron Harang, Rodrigo Lopez, Kevin Millwood, Vicente Padilla, Brad Penny, Ben Sheets, Jeff Supon, Javier Vasquez, who will not be coming back.
Right.
Brandon Webb, who's another guy, you know, had the 22 wins in 08, the Cy Young in 06, but he's coming off shoulder surgery. And Chris Young, another shoulder injury. He was 2-0 in four starts with the Padres this year. So, like I said at the outset when we started, I mean, it's just slim pickings after Cliff Lee. But out of that list, does anyone else kind of jump out at you and say, hey, maybe?
Well, I think there's two. I'll give you two. Righty Brandon Webb would be an interesting guy for me. Again, if he's healthy, and you were hearing some signs at the end of last year that he might have been, I would be willing to take a chance on him. He's a pure sinker ball pitcher. If he has he lost his arm slot a little bit, and that's where he was getting a lot of the pain. And I think if you're able to confirm that he's going to be healthy or as best as you can, he would be one guy. The other guy who came back last year from surgery was Jeff Francis with Colorado, a lefty that, in Yankee Stadium, I think fits well. But again, you're really to count on them in the middle of the rotation, I wouldn't do that. You got to really look at them more as, fifth starters, guys that may be in that where Nova is now, that they come in and take that spot. And if you're the Yankees, again, if you're going to have Lee, and let's say they have Pettit, you might be willing to kind of go with Nova in that situation, let him learn and develop on the job.
I saw Chris Benson and Mike Hampton on the list, but I just kind of left them off.
So. Yeah, I would say shy away from them. From past experience.
for obvious reasons. Yeah. One more for me before I pass it along to my cohort in crime. That would be Mr. Oriyama. And that is, Jim, most people, I don't know if you're on Twitter, but a lot of Yankee fans got their collective underwear in a bunch when they found out that CC Sabathia didn't win the Cy Young Award. Now, I didn't fall into that. I thought Felix Hernandez, here's all I needed. Hernandez's two starts against the Yankees and watching him in those two starts was all I needed to see who the most dominant pitcher was in the American League. What are your thoughts on him winning the AL Cy Young Award?
Well, I mean, I begrudgingly say that he deserved it. I thought CC and I thought David Price should have received more consideration than they did. And I'll tell you why. There's been a turn and twist in the voting. We've seen it. I think it's for better for the game. And we know it's the best pitcher, but I think that there was a lot less emphasis placed on wins this year than I can ever recall. And for CC's defense in particular, to win ball games in that division and it's a hitter's park. And really, we all know and saw games this year where he had big leads and he's just pumping fastballs down the middle to get through the game rather than really grinding out, pitch by pitch. So he didn't have to worry about it as much. You take all those things into consideration. I thought CC and Price should have gotten more first place votes. And in the end, I probably would have given it to Felix Hernandez because he was the best pitcher. But I don't like some of the voting, the way it's going more toward away from the wins stat, which I think is important. And I don't think they're putting as much importance on it.
Hey, Jim, how are you? It's Joe Oriyama.
Hey, Joe. Hi, Joe.
I definitely agree with you. They're not putting the wins at a premium anymore, which is a category. It's an art to win ball games. And Roy Halladay actually said that in his press conference after he won his Cy Young this year. And he said, he would be surprised if CC Sabathia wasn't right there and David Price wasn't right there with Felix Hernandez. It really is a shock to me that, I get the whole, he was the most dominant pitcher this year, and I might have given him my vote, but really, you look at Steve Carlton back in 1972, the guy won 27 games and got barely more run support than Felix Hernandez got this year. So there is importance in winning games.
Well, there is, and listen, Roy Halladay would certainly know it himself. I mean, in the other sense of things, Felix did. We all know that you can't entirely control wins. You can only do what you can do as a pitcher. But if you're keeping your team in the ball game as long as possible, like Carlton, in the day that he just finished the game, he reached nine. You don't do that anymore.
Right.
Okay, I get that. But in the same sense, I don't think we've gone. like we did with the innings pitch and the pitch count. We, I think, went too far to the other extreme and maybe became very restrictive. And right. Now we're starting to come back. I think we've gone too far in devaluing a winning pitcher. I think we've got to come back and bring the pendulum back a little bit.
There's got to be a happy medium. And somebody like a la Nolan Ryan with the pitch count is going to come around and say, hey, you know, we got to value wins a little bit more here. I agree with that. I actually want to ask you about the Boston Red Sox and their situation. You know, I know that, you know, everybody's kind of saying that it's a foregone conclusion that Jason Worth is going to sign there. But, I don't know. Now we're hearing that, you know, they might not be the front runner anymore. Philadelphia still might be in the mix here. What are your thoughts on the Red Sox and what they need to do this offseason?
Well, I mean, they need to try to sign or re-sign Adrian Beltre, Victor Martinez. Those are two, mm-hmm. I think, needs. I had a chance to talk to Theo Epstein, GM, and Larry Lucchino, the president there. They're going to be active in the free agent market, but they're not going to fill all of their needs in that area. So they'll go with some of the young guys. They have a couple of young guys. You know, if they can't sign a Beltre, they'll probably go with a guy like Lowry. If they can't sign an outfielder, they'll go with Ryan Kalish. Crawford or Worth are the two guys. I think Worth probably fits better. Crawford seems like he wants to play on the West Coast.
Right.
But, you know, like you said, Philly's involved. I don't personally think Philly can afford him at this point. Like their payroll, they've committed too much mm-hmm. money at this time, and they want an answer from Worth. The agent Scott Boras, you know, sooner rather than later, they're not going to get that from him. Worth's not going to sign until later in December. So I think Philly's going to end up being out of it.
And, you know, like you said, Crawford has said that he wants to play on the West Coast. The Angels seem like a good destination for Crawford. It seems like a match that, you know, the Angels love to sign those type of outfielders. They did it with Torii Hunter. They have that track record. How do you think that this is all going to play out when it's all said and done? How do you think the landscape is going to be in the American League when the coast clears and the 2011 season starts? Where do you see the teams and the powerhouses really being?
Yeah, I think you're going to see the traditional ones with the Red Sox and Yankees. Tampa's taking a step back, and you're starting to hear them, you know, not only pick apart some of their, you know, Pena's not going back there, Crawford's not going back there, their almost entire bullpen is not going to be returned. Mm-hmm. Now you're hearing Jason Bartlett potentially in a trade. They're going to be a shell. They'll still be good, but they won't be like they were this year. I think Boston, I think Detroit's a team to really watch, Joe, and the Angels are certainly going to, you know, push Texas. I think Texas is going to continue, but Detroit's the one. They've made a ton of moves already. They re-signed Peralta and Inge. They've already made a nice trade. They signed Benoit. They put a lot of money in Benoit, but they have a lot more money to spend. We're looking at a middle of the lineup bat. Don't discount them for Jason Worth too. I think they're going to be heavily involved, and they have a prior relationship with Boras on a number of their clients.
All right, now looking at, you know, the Arizona situation, a guy we know very well here, Kevin Towers, took over that job there and already made a splash at the GM meeting with Justin Upton talks. How serious do you think that, you know, he's willing to part with a 23-year-old dynamic player like Justin Upton?
Well, yeah, and then don't forget, Joe, he's also a very affordable, under an affordable contract, too. So all of those factors, I think, are in the favor of him staying in Arizona. He's doing what, you know, you have to do when you go into a different, new situation. You have to explore. You know, if you can get three or four really solid pieces for Upton, then I think he would move him because he mm-hmm. has a number of holes he wants to fill. But in the end, I think there are guys like Mark Reynolds he's going to try to move. Adam LaRoche is a free agent. I don't know if they'll re-sign him. They're going to, I think, look to move Chris Young. Some of those high strikeout guys,
right.
They're going to try to trade, and I think they'll end up keeping up.
I actually want to ask you about the Derek Jeter situation. You know, Derek Jeter has, you know, logged many great years with the Yankees. He's about to, you know, embark on 3,000 hits, becoming the only Yankee to ever do it, you know, solely in pinstripes, which is amazing when you think about their history. But it looks like the Yankees are going to come in with an offer of 3 years at $45 million as their initial offer. That's what we're hearing. So I don't know. I mean, do you think that, you know, this is going to be a long, dragged-out process, but eventually he's going to sign? And what do you think I don't think this is going to happen, but if he gets out on the open market, what do you think he's worth at this point?
Well, it's going to be an interesting debate because you're seeing, you know, it's become a little bit more public than they, I think, at first wanted it to be, and there's been a lot of comments here lately. in the end, I don't think there's a team out there that's keeping money in reserves in case these negotiations, you know, fall flat and he wants to go elsewhere. I really don't think, to me, Detroit would be the one logical situation. They've spent a lot of money. I don't think they're looking at Derek Jeter. I don't think there's any other team out there. So I think there's really one team in town.
Right.
In the end, you look at 3 years, he wants, what, 5, 6? I think they'll end up settling on 4 years. He has every right, by the way, to and when you look at Posada and A-Rod, they're signed into their early 40s. Mariano is too. So, you know, if you're there, and listen, we all know who's the guy who grabs the mic when you're moving from the old Yankee Stadium to the new Yankee Stadium.
No, you're right.
It's Derek Jeter, right? Who grabs the mic when Mr. Steinbrenner passes away? It's Derek Jeter. Bob Shepard, same thing. So we can't sit here and pretend to say that, well, marketing doesn't play into it, or it's just solely baseball, and the business aspect isn't a part of it, because in Derek Jeter's case, it also is part of that package.
You're absolutely right on that point. You know, he has, for years and years and years, been the face and the voice of the New York Yankees, and you have to factor that into this possibly one last big contract for Derek Jeter. One more question from me before I send it over to Chris. I want to ask you about the Mets and Sandy Alderson. And, you know, do you like the signing of him being the GM? And what do you think the Mets need to do to really get back on the map here in New York?
Well, listen, Sandy is an accomplished general manager, an accomplished executive. He has a track record that will, I think, very well for what the Mets are looking for. They have a lot of work to do. Now, he is coming into a situation, they're 500 ball club. They're not as bad as what, you know, the perception is out there that this is a 90-loss team. They're not a 90-loss team. So they can be, and if everything falls right, they can be competitive next year. I'm not saying win the division, because I think the Phillies and the Braves are better than them right now. But going forward, in terms of having a disciplined plan and a clear vision of what you're looking for, which is really what the GM should be doing, they have two-year, three-year plans. Sandy is one of the best in the game, and I think that you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone out there that would have been better suited for that position. I thought it was a great hire, and I think the Mets, it's hard for Mets fans to be patient, but I think if they are, you know, the Mets will get themselves back into the thick of the National League East.
That's one thing Mets fans have to be, is patient, Jim. We've learned that over the years, definitely.
Not a lot of it, is there, Chris?
Well, you know, it's just, I'm one of those New York guys who, and I just root for teams to do well in New York. I don't care who it is. It's just, it's good for the area. It's good for the city. So it would behoove me to hope that Mr. Alderson brings in a manager that could turn things around. You know, and like you said, they're not going to challenge maybe for the division next year, but get some fannies in the seats over there at Citi Field and have the Mets be more competitive this season.
I mean, I've had a long-standing relationship, obviously, there. I mean, almost my whole executive career with
right.
the Mets. And it is a good organization. Do they, you know, are they unfairly, to some degree, compared to the Yankees? Yeah, but that's what you're up against. That's the reality of the situation. You're cross town, you're compared to the Yankees. They're the best. They really should be more focused on the Phillies and not worried so much about the public opinion. I think they have gotten caught up in that a little bit. But overall, they have an ownership that really does want to win. It behooves them to want to win. Anything other than that, any other thought process, doesn't make any sense, because you're devaluing the asset that they have, which is a tremendous one of the highest revenue generating teams in the game. They don't want to have a lousy organization and a lousy team. That's but when you're losing like that and you make some poor decisions, it does at least throw it open for question.
Well, I could relate it to my older brother and myself. My older brother was an all-county, all-state offensive lineman at 6'3", 260, going through high school. And I was a 5'2", 120-pound kid who they wanted to play center. So the Yankees are like my older brother, and I am the little brother who got kicked around all the time. But sooner or later, you catch up to them, and, you know, I think the Mets will be okay. With this new direction, they needed to do that. I think it's well overdue. with what they did, cleaning house and moving on. But I think they're taking the right steps, especially with Sandy Alderson, and hopefully he'll get them going in the right direction. Jim?
I'm confident they will. It just may not be for 2011, like we said.
Right.
I think 2012 is more realistic.
Jim, listen, Joe and I really appreciate you taking the time out to do this with us on the Off the Wall podcast. Once again, it's the Power Alley with Kevin Kennedy on SiriusXM's MLB Network Radio, XM 175, Sirius 210. You could hear Mr. Duquette. Thank you very much, sir. We appreciate it.
All right, Chris. Joe, thanks a lot.
All right.
Want to see what everyone's talking about? Check out the two-time Emmy Award-winning video content at yesnetwork.com. It's the best in Yankees web shows, podcasts, and features. Only at yesnetwork.com.
It's Off the Wall on yesnetwork.com. Here's more from Chris Sheeran.
Welcome back to the Off the Wall podcast here on yesnetwork.com. I'm Chris Sheeran, joined with Joe Auriemma, not at the hip, but, you know, doing the show together, as it were. Joe, what a job by Jim Duquette. Just an excellent job getting us the very latest on the baseball free agency situation. His thoughts on Cliff Lee, his thoughts on the Yankees in general, his thoughts about the Mets. It's just a tremendous job.
You know, Jim was a heck of a baseball player himself back in the day, and this is a very good talent evaluator. He did have that one season with the Mets in 2004 as their general manager, but this is a guy who knows talent and is a real good baseball mind. Comes from a good baseball family.
He does know true talent. That's why he was on the Off the Wall podcast.
It's like Mean Gene.
Yeah. True talent. Anyway, moving on from baseball, because I think we covered the Cliff Lee situation, and I mean, by the time we're taping this next week, he could be a Yankee or a Ranger. Who knows how long it's going to draw itself out. Let's talk a little bit about football. Let's flip the script here, as it were. New York football, it's been okay. I mean, we're back, first of all. We've had a couple of weeks off, and we apologize to our loyal listeners, but we are back. So let's talk about New York football. The Jets are 7-2, and the Giants are 6-3, so heading in the right direction. This week, the Jets should win. They are 2-2 at home, which doesn't make any sense. And they're 5-0 on the road, which, you know, great road team, but brand-new stadium, they should be better than 2-2. And they, the last home game, they got shut out by the Packers, let's not forget, 9-0. So I think the Jets will be fine this week against the Texans. They should win this game. As far as the Giants go, and Joe will get your thoughts in just a second, they could be. I'm not saying they will, but they could be running into a buzzsaw in Philadelphia. Now, that's what everybody's thinking about, and that's what everybody's talking about because of the game Michael Vick put up. 4 touchdowns through the air, 2 touchdowns with his feet. But I got a news flash for everyone. The Redskins defense is not the Giants defense. Now, I know the Giants played awful against the Cowboys. I mean, there's no excuse for that letdown. And, you know, the power outage, the power went out on the Giants, too. Yeah, let's use that cheesy line. Every newspaper in the area, oh, there was a power outage. Not just literal, but with the Giants, too. Anyway, I really think that game was an aberration. I don't know how that happened. I think in my little deluded world, I think Jerry Jones, after those brutal losses in Green Bay and to Jacksonville at his palatial new stadium, not in that order, but it was Jacksonville, then Green Bay on the Sunday night, he went into that locker room and basically read that team the riot act. And said, if you embarrass yourself one more time, he fired Wade Phillips. I'm not saying this did happen, but I wouldn't put it past Jerry Jones. And he went into the locker room and said, you guys do that one more time. I know I can't take your paychecks away, but I can fine you. And I think when they walked down that field to play the Giants, it was just no holds barred. That, you know, they got Jason Garrett in there, winning that game the way they did nothing but good things for him and maybe staying with the Cowboys. But I just think Jones put it on the line and the team responded.
You know, the worst thing that could have happened to the Giants actually was Jason Garrett getting hired and that performance that they had in Green Bay. You know, it was a bit of a buzzsaw. But, you know, the NFL, if it's if we've seen anything from the NFL this year, is that it's such a week-to-week sport. It's amazing how not one team has taken the bull by the horns this year and gone on a consistent basis and got won games. And the only team that's really done that is the Giants when they went on their winning streak here and did it in big-time fashion. You look at the Patriots, they get crushed by the Cleveland Browns, and then they go and crush the Pittsburgh Steelers, who were one of the best teams in the league. So you just don't know in this NFL. And that's why I'm saying, you know, the Giants have to, you know, say, okay, we ran into a team that was motivated under a new coach that, you know, we had, you know, pacing-wise, we didn't come out firing on all our pistons. We're coming back from the West Coast. Steve Smith's out. The offensive line still hurt a little bit. And we need to go into Philadelphia and say, you know, we got to change our schemes. We got to pick up the pace because Dallas played a quick game. Philadelphia's going to play a quick game. And we need to, you know, we need to really come out firing on all cylinders. I think they're going to.
Well, what they're going to have to do, Joe, and I don't know if you're going to agree with me, but you know Philadelphia and you know their defensive scheme. You see it every year as a Giant fan. I just think Ahmad Bradshaw is going to be on the receiving end of a ton of screen passes, or he should be, to beat that blitz. And that's how I would beat it. I would say, hey, you want to rush Eli until there's no tomorrow? Fine. You're going to send seven. You're going to have four back there with all our whole offensive line blocking them and just a clear path for Ahmad Bradshaw for a touchdown. It's going to be – going into Philadelphia is never easy. Never. I'm not saying – I don't know what Joe's thoughts are. I know he thinks the Giants are going to win. It's not going to be a cakewalk. If you're a Giant fan and you're expecting a win, you're going to be on the edge of your seat in your living room or wherever your TV may reside for that entire game. Michael Vick has no turnovers this year. Let me say it five more times because maybe it'll jinx him. Michael Vick has no turnovers this year. It worked in the Penn-Yale game because Andrew Sampson, their place kicker, made 81 straight point after touchdowns. And this loudmouth behind the mic right now says, Andrew Sampson, perfect, 81 for 81 in his career, puts his right foot into it. It's wide right. So here's to hoping Michael Vick has his first turnover against the Giants. And the Eagles are plus 12. In the turnover margin, so that's something the Giants will have to look for too. But I really think on the offensive side of the ball, if the Eagles are going to decide that they're going to blitz most of the game, the Giants should counteract that with some screens.
I agree with that, and I think you're going to see them go into that, you know, into that game with a solid game plan. I think the defense is going to have to utilize their safeties more as linebackers to try to keep Michael Vick at bay. It's funny because in the beginning of his career, the guy really was in the 50s, low to mid-50s in completion percentage, and the whole deal was keep Michael Vick in the pocket, and he's not going to beat you. Now it's, you know what? Let Michael Vick run because you keep him in that pocket, and he's gonna tear you apart. This is a guy that, you know, all of a sudden studies the game tape, knows his opponent and is a efficient quarterback from that pocket. But if you get him running, you can get a free shot on Michael Vick, and that's where the Giants, as we've seen this year, they've knocked a couple quarterbacks out this year.
And that's where Philly has to be worried, because if Michael Vick does get free, and the Giants are going to pop him, because Vick isn't the kind of guy that's going to slide. He's going to take a hit. But let me give you this. It's interesting what you brought up, because he was in the 50s when he was with Atlanta with the completion percentage. Jay Feely on Twitter, I thought, said it best. It really opened my eyes, and it was really interesting, because when he was with Atlanta, Vick was down there. This was pre-jail time. Mm-hmm. And they always used to sit around and say, this guy is so talented, but can you imagine if he actually applied himself, watched film, worked out, did all this stuff? He said, you're seeing that now. He said, you're seeing – basically, Twitter's only 140 characters. Obviously, I'm paraphrasing. But he said, if he did all these things, just imagine what he could do. And he said, that's the Michael Vick you're seeing with the Philadelphia Eagles right now. And I have some questions for those people who are questioning Andy Reid when all those eyebrows started to raise when he traded Donovan McNabb. Are those eyebrows still up? I don't think so, Joe.
You know, the funny thing about that, Chris, is, you know, if they kept Donovan McNabb around, I think there might be two better quarterbacks that would have been sitting behind him. Kevin Cobb is a very, very good quarterback. He's got a very good problem in Philadelphia with Michael Vick, and then you got Cobb behind him. I mean, this is – it's a dream for Andy Reid right now. And I just want to make my point here that I think that the Giants and Eagles are the two best teams in the NFC. You know, we looked at the Chicago Bears on Thursday night, defeat a Dolphins team with their third quarterback, and people saying, well, they're 7
– scored 16 points!
You know, and they're saying – well, that's what they're saying. Their defense is right up there with any defense in the league, and, you know, it's this is a team that can make some noise. Let's bottom line it. This is a team that got destroyed by the Giants.
How was that offensive line at the new Meadowlands Stadium?
I agree with you. I totally agree with you. Their defense can only take them so far. Their offense doesn't score any points. And really, Cutler is hit or miss, so you don't know what you're going to get from Jay Cutler. But, you know, I just think that the Eagles and the Giants are the two best teams in the NFC. Even if the loser goes down this week to 6-4, I think both teams are making the playoffs. I think we're going to see them in the NFC Championship this year.
That would be something. Now, where that game would be played would be probably the team that wins. Because an NFC Championship game between the Eagles and the Giants would be that's Yankees Red Sox. I'm sorry, but it is. You might disagree with that, say no, it would have to be the Cowboys. No. It's the Giants and the Eagles. That would be the NFL equivalent in this area of Yankees Red Sox. It really would.
No, I agree with that. You know, some of the older Giant fans like my father. My father said last week that, you know, when the Cowboys beat the Giants, I mean, he was not happy for a good, you know, 4 days, and said that if the Giants had just swept the Cowboys and just kind of put them under the rug at this point, that was his Super Bowl. I mean, that's what these older Giants, because they know what Tom Landry and those Dallas teams did to the Giants in the 70s and the early 80s when they just ran up the score. And that's what those Cowboy teams were about. And there's a pure hatred from those older Giant fans. But for me, in my generation growing up, the Eagles have always been that thorn in the Giants' side. I remember, you know, going back, you know, they beat him in 86, but going back to 89, 90, I mean, those the 89 team could have been a Super Bowl champion, and the Eagles, you know, they thoroughly dominated. And in the 90 season, when they did win the Super Bowl, the Giants were 10-0, and they went into that buzzsaw in Philadelphia, and that's what I remember. I remember those Philadelphia Eagle teams with Cunningham and Reggie White and Jerome Brown. Those were the teams that I hated, and I hate the Eagles.
I don't think we could tell, just by the way you brought that up. But it's interesting. You said the 10-0 Giants in 1990. I remember watching Inside the NFL, and Steve DiAsi was on the field before the game saying, beautiful day in November, 11-0 Giants,
can't beat it.
And then they go out and get smoked by the Eagles, but I totally agree with your assessment. It just depends on what generation you're from, and definitely we're close enough in years to have the same hatred, and it's more so for the Eagles, I think. Eagles and Cowboys are pretty much, I think, with me, if I had to flip a coin, it would definitely be the Eagles. I hate the Eagles more than I hate the Cowboys. I really do. Growing up, I was a Cowboy fan. Can't help it. Drew Pearson, he went to my high school. And you know the story. I'm not going to get back into it. But, Joe, you brought up some great points, and you want one more.
One more. I want to make my – you picked the Giants. You know, you picked the Eagles and the Jets. Is that who you're picking? Who'd you pick? I want to hear your picks. Let's hear your pick.
All right. I'm taking the Eagles and the Jets.
I just said it. Okay. Well, here's my prediction. I actually am going the complete opposite of you. I think the Texans are going to smoke the Jets. I think the Jets have played hooky a long time right now.
Chubb is hurting, though. How's he going to get him the ball? And Revis is covering, you know, Mr. All-World receiver Andre Johnson.
That's a fair point. Arian Foster, baby. He's going to run. He's going to run all over him.
Joe owns Arian Foster, so this is why he hopes and prays that the Texans throttle the Jets.
Okay, I'm rethinking this one. I'm going to take the Jets in a close game, because of Arian Foster, and I'm going to take the New York Football Giants. I just think it's week to week. This is a team coming off a 59-point performance. I think it's going to be a great game, and it could be the Eagles are winning late, and I'm sweating over here. But I think the Giants somehow, some way, are going to pull this one out.
All I care about on Sunday night is it being a close game. I can't be out of it like if I was a Redskin fan like Jared Boschnack or Cameron White, two of our coworkers here, yes, who had to be just looking at the television in embarrassment when the Eagles were taking it to the Redskins. I just want it to be close. That's all I ask for. I don't want – if the Giants are blowing the Eagles out, fine. I just don't want it the other way around. Because when I have friends over, which I'm doing for the first time in my house, which I just got, I just want everybody to be into it at least past halftime. That's all I got. Anyway, for Joe Auriemma and also for Jim Duquette, one more time, the co-host of Power Alley with Kevin Kennedy on SiriusXM's MLB Network Radio. That's on XM 175 and Sirius 210. I am Chris Sheeran. Welcome back, everyone, to the Off the Wall podcast, brought to you by nothing. Hopefully we could change that someday. We'll see you next week, everybody.